Mike Bisaglia here from SeavillePodcast.com. You are about to listen to RunCast, a weekly form of everything running, with your host, Mark Lorenzoni, a community running expert who has been directing hundreds of area for nonprofit foot races and coaching thousands of runners for the past 30 years.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of RunCast. It will actually be my last RunCast for a couple of weeks because Cynthia and I and my two middle young kids, actually, our youngest, Adrian and Annie, we're going on a walking trip, a hiking trip along southern England, along the coast. It should be really fun. We haven't been across the ocean in 10 years, and that's a big treat. Adrian graduated from college recently. Did a great job down there at Virginia Tech in the engineering school. And Annie, not quite as grand, but graduated from eighth grade. So we're going to be gone for a few weeks. So I think my next time will be up, Mike, is we'll be back, I think, the 19th. So the 20th we'll cut and we'll be ready again on the 21st. So it is actually, I don't want to ever call things too quiet because we're always active, but it is a quieter time. It's one of the slower months of the year, July, for races. A lot of people on vacation. It's hotter.
Right.
UVA's finally all finished. We can talk about that. High schools are quiet. There tends to be less going on. There's no marathons to speak of around the country that locals are doing. So it tends to be a quieter time. So anyway, thanks for listening in this week. And like I said, we'll talk to you in a few weeks. It's a special time out in Eugene. Our two middle kids, that's where I was getting the middle kids, Audrey and Adrian, were actually out there. They were taking a little vacation. They flew in San Francisco and drove all the way up the coast, did Sonoma and Napa and the Redwoods, and came up along Highway 1. Beautiful. They were showing us pictures last night. Gorgeous. Of the coastline there, the West Coast, Northern California, and Southern Oregon. But they ended up in Eugene for the USA Track and Field Championships, and what a treat that was. They got to sit with the vigilantes and some of the other Charlottesville folks. It was neat. There was a lot of support out there. And kind of a mixed meet. It's really fantastic that we had so many athletes make it, and they performed quite well, but we only had a few make it into the finals, which is, you know, you go out there for the experience, but you hope to make it in the finals. And Stephanie Garcia, I would have to say, is the big story. She's the one we've talked about all winter and spring, particularly spring. She set the school record and then set it again, broke her own record. She was in third place. Now remember, this is the USA Track and Field Championships. Nothing bigger. Non-Olympic year.
NBC.
Made on NBC.
Watching, yeah.
Not my favorite announcers in the world, those guys that do the job. I think they're actually pretty, how do I put it? They're out of their depth, I think, sometimes,
sure,
they're announcing. But anyway, so be it. We got a chance to see some of the meet on the television, and ESPN was covering it also. It was great. But Stephanie, the top three people in every event get to go to the World Championships. World Championships are the single biggest meet in the world other than the Olympics. And, of course, non-Olympic year. So this is it, you know, chance to wear the jersey, you know, overseas. Pretty fantastic stuff. Stephanie was in third place with half a lap to go, less than half a lap, and tripped and, you know, stumbled, fell, and ended up, you know, typical attitude on her part. She gets right up, springs right up, and Gutsy Garcia, and finishes out and narrowly misses the third, gets fourth place. You know, and you always, you try and take away the good. You know, you get frustrated. I'm sure she was heartbroken. But fourth place, pretty tremendous stuff, and it bodes well for her future. I hope she continues to compete. She's finished up at UVA. I pray and hope that she takes some time off now. Sometimes it's a blessing. And it's interesting, this European circuit and the World Championships, this prolongs an already long season. She's been competing for several months now at a high level. And, you know, it's a mixed blessing to make the team because that means, I got to keep training because I'm representing the United States.
Yeah.
The meet is until later in the summer, August, September, whenever it is.
Got to keep up.
And you got to keep going. So, you know, I find most of the time the athletes I've been involved over the years, when they go on this European circuit after a long season, they come home pretty burned out.
I bet.
A lot of travel and racing twice a week, high expectations. It's exhausting. So anyway, fans are really, you know, jazzed about Garcia. And then on the RMR side, one of our kids, Donnie Cowart, He did tremendous. He was sixth overall. He was ninth last year. I was teasing him. I said, okay, you're ninth in 2010. You're sixth in 2011. 2012, get a little math pattern, a little rhythm going here. You make the Olympic team next year. Wouldn't that be neat? And he's gaining more and more experience all the time. It was a strategic race. It was a little slower time than, in fact, a lot of the races. Interesting enough, Mike, when the reward is place, not time,
okay,
you see a lot more cat and mouse games. And almost all the events went out really slow. The men's 1500 went out slower than a competitive high school race for the first couple of laps. The men's 800 went out almost like what you'd see sophomores and juniors, good sophomores and juniors in high school go out at, because they're playing cat and mouse, because it all comes down this sprint to see, to look and who's going to make the first move, who's going to make the first move. And that was similar in the steeplechase with Donnie. So he was well off his best time, but so was the leader. So you go for a place. Why? Because they're trying to make the world championship team. Now, all these people leading to the USA track and field championships, it was always thinking about time, because you had to get a certain qualifying time, not place, to get to USA's.
Right.
So it's kind of a weird thing. And suddenly the game changes. And I can't think of too many other sports like that where your strategy, I was talking about this with a bunch of people the other day, it just struck us that you actually, if you're not used to that kind of strategy, you can get caught and burned. And it happened in the 800. Alec, my son, summed it up. He goes, I said, what's the deal? He's got every single guy going slow and they're all kicking at the end. He goes, that's because every single one of those guys thinks that they're faster than everyone else over the last 200 or 300. So but only three it. People are going to, so they're saving it. I mean, if you go through an 800, you're a 145 800 meter runner, and you go through the 400 at 208 pace, you know there is an explosive amount of energy left, and it's all going to come down who's got the best kick on that given day. It sounds weird, but it's no one wants to take a chance going out, because then think, okay, if I go out too fast, I'll get caught and I'll miss the team, so I'll just hang with the pack.
Right. It gets me thinking, though, if you were just to do your
even
training and go and race the way you're supposed to, not just go out at the correct speed early, and at the when it's all said and done, your time should
you're thinking
beat,
like me, which
the
is probably you and I cannot relate to this, but you're thinking just like I say the same thing. It's like, okay, come on, you know. So the 1500 meter winning time normally in a meet like this, I mean not like this, but an international time, and to make an international team would be in the low 330s.
Okay,
332, 333, 334, 336. Okay, somewhere in there.
Right.
No, these guys ran 346, 347, made the team. It's amazing.
See,
that's not even a four-minute mile. And you might say, Mark, four-minute mile's fast. No, these are the fastest. That's like a 403, 404 mile they ran, equivalent to. What? I mean, they're high schoolers, not the best high schoolers, mind you, but they're running. So no slight to them, but it really, the strategy brings it down to kick after kick after kick. Mm. The only race I saw where they did it different was in the I can't remember. Was it the women's 1500? And she got out way ahead of the group right off the bat, and then they reeled her in.
They reeled her in.
Yeah, with their it was interesting. So I don't know. It's a very special meet, and really special for Donnie and Stephanie to do so well. Robbie Andrews had a human race finally, where he ran two 800s leading to the finals. He had to qualify, and he just looked tired and a little off, and afterwards, typical him, he's very humble and modest, and you know, he was farther back in the pack, didn't make the team, and just a great attitude, great kid, and he'll take something from this, he'll learn from it, and he'll be back next year, and a year from now, it won't be the USA Track and Field Championships, it's going to be called the Olympic Trials,
sure. So,
you know, bigger fish to fry. Audrey and Adrian said it was really fun, too, after the meet, they got Steve Finley, who used to run at the University of Virginia. He's at Oregon now. And they caught up with him, and he's buddies with them, and said, come with me. I'll give you a tour of the town. And
cool. They
were meeting this guy and that guy, this famous runner, that famous runner. It was like they were awestruck, and got to meet Andrew Weeding, the great Oregon Olympian, who got caught in that crossfire. He ended up finishing fourth in the 800 because, again, it came down to a kick. We had the kids' Triple Crown award ceremony on Sunday. We put 60 kids managed to get to all three of those events this spring. 60, Mike. That's pretty amazing. So they ran the Run for Autism and the Pour in Rain. They ran the Charlottesville Day School Family Fitness Run out at Panorama, and then they wrapped it up doing the third one at the Discovery Dash. And we, Stacy Bruins, who runs the Charlottesville Day School, Kate Lambert, and then the folks at the Discovery, Virginia Discovery Museum, we cooked up an award called the Kids Triple Count Perseverance Award, and that was awarded to two kids that are just exemplary in their attitude and their fight to get the job done and the way they treat other people. And so Gracie Moore and Mikey Cooley were the recipients of that first time award. The women's four miler, if you heard the news, because the station here is very actively involved, but it opened at 5 o'clock Saturday morning. It's closed at 3 o'clock. 3,500 women. At one point, there were 500 per hour. Cynthia was tracking this. My wife's the race director, and pretty amazing. It's good and it's bad. If you missed it, you're bumming. Get on the wait list. Go to women's four and with the numeral four miler.com. Click on there. Get to the wait list and get your name on there. Wait list is pretty long right now, but hopefully sure in early August, mid August, there'll be a lot of drops. People say happens. You can change your plans.
Right.
The other interesting thing that happened was a lot of women. And I mean a lot, entered twice and three times by mistake, I guess. So we're dropping them down to one time, right. And that opens up some spots. So,
gotcha.
Women's 4 mile training program continues, and that's every Saturday morning, 7:30 at the UVA's The Park. The Park, not to be confused with other parks. This is The Park.
That's right.
over behind the JAG school. Neat story. Mike, you'll really enjoy this. And it's a woman I've coached. We started working together this winter. She's an exceptional athlete with very little running background. And she did well at the 10-miler. We finished in the top five. Name is Megan Bowen, mid-20s, UVA grad student. She moved out here with her boyfriend from, I think it's either Wyoming or Montana. But anyway, she's quite the talent. She's training all winter for the Seattle Marathon, which was last weekend. She goes out there, everything's going. She's good shape, no injuries, tapered, ready to go, ready to rip. She wants to run somewhere in the low threes, between 3 hours and 3:05. Everything's going fine until race morning. They have a traffic snafu with the parking at the race site, and so the traffic starts to back up.
Oh, God.
3.5 miles out, she comes up onto this traffic jam. It's not moving. It's a parking lot, the highway. She's 3.5 miles from the start. She's sitting in the car, getting more anxious. It's not moving. She's in there with her parents.
How close of a time is this?
She's now down to 15 minutes. She's 3.5 miles out. Okay, you got this going in your head?
Yeah.
Now, you and I have talked before, may or may not have been clear to the listeners. You do not warm up before a marathon. You make the first 3 to 5 miles of your marathon like a warm up.
Right.
You do not run any farther than 26.2 miles if you can help it. Because a marathon is God-given. About as far as humans can go at that kind of faster pace.
Yep.
Ultramarathons, you run much slower. You can go 50 miles, 100 miles, but you're
slowing down,
stopping. You're eating along the way, getting leg massages. I'm not saying it's a easy, cheesy event, but it's a shifting gear. But to run at a pace, she's trying to run between 6:50 and 7 minutes a mile. Okay, she gets out of the car. She's right now panicked, rightfully so. 15 minutes ago, gets out of the car, says goodbye. She runs over 3 miles, almost 3.5 miles. 6:30 pace, because she's the adrenaline. She's looking at her watch. It's race starting at 7:30. It's 7:22. It's 7:26. I better pick up the pace. She gets there. Now she's in corral number one, wave number one, because of her time prediction.
Right.
Corral number one is already gone to start, and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 10 11 12 13. She gets corral number 14 is just going out. They're the 4:45 to 5 hour people. So she's happy she's made it to the start, but she's already poisoned herself with this fast warm-up, quote-unquote. Now she's running with people that are running 11 and 12-minute pace. No slight to them.
And there's no penalty to her time.
No, it's chip. It's chip.
Right.
It's chip
so
time.
She, okay.
So the chip starts when she crosses the mat. But did you hear who I said she was with?
Right. No, I'm just...
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I have to be careful here to word this so that people understand. I coach people that run 5-hour marathons. They're working just as hard as Megan is to try and run 3. But let's face it, if you're in a traffic on a highway and someone's going 35 to 40 miles an hour in the fast lane and you're trying to go 60.
Oh, it's a pain.
You're trying to get around them.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine on a highway, but when you have 6, 7, 8,000 people, you got 20,000 people in the marathon. It's a huge marathon. So she begins to weave, shuck, jive, sneak, looking for slivers of daylight, slowing down. Excuse me. She gets to 18 or 19 miles. She's exhausted. She kept saying to herself, why did I do this? I shouldn't have started after, because she saw this thing unraveling early on. But she said, once the ball was rolling, she finishes the race. She's 3:10. Amazing.
Wow.
It was a PR. Not what we were looking for, but under the circumstances.
She ran 30 miles.
Kind of freaky. She looks, she's seventh woman overall, she comes to find later out, later on. Seventh
woman.
And she looks, she's really upset. She comes across, she's just like, what a day. This was unbelievable. It's like a living nightmare. Like there's anxiety nightmares that you'll have from time to time when you're anxious in life. You go to bed, you wake up next morning and say, what was that anxiety dream I had? She ran 30 miles. She looks at her Garmin. 30
That's
miles.
Absurd.
So pretty incredible story. This is not the type of thing we want people to repeat. You know, Megan was saying to me afterwards, I never, ever, ever want to relive this nightmare, ever. I will never make this mistake again. It wasn't necessarily her fault. She goes, admittedly, we started out the door a little late, foreign town. You know, you don't know all the shortcuts. You know, and plus you're thinking the traffic's bound to get moving. They got to start this race. Turns out there was an issue with parking. This happens from time to time, especially with events that may be their first time. Or we had it at the 10-miler this year just a little bit. Because we're using a different start, and traffic got backed up right before the start. We realized that what was happening is people were parking in JPJ parking lot. What were they doing? Getting out of the car, crossing over from JPJ parking lot to go into U-Haul to pick up their packets, and coming back, crossing over the crosswalk. You know, the main crosswalk between U-Haul, you know, when you go to a basketball game.
Right.
Well, there was no cop there stopping people from going across that crosswalk so that cars could go through. So the people trying to get to the race were now killing the people that were, you know, were being, you know, slowed up by people who already parked. So we took care of that. A couple of us went up there, my daughter and I, a few others, and we stopped the people from going across the crosswalk, for let 100 cars through, then we, you know, open it up. So obviously that wasn't happening in Seattle. So what a mess. Will Ryan, he's a rising ninth grader, call out to him. He and his dad, Jim. Not to be confused with Jim Ryan, the famous miler. This is Jim Ryan, the famous UVA law professor and 255 Boston Marathoner. He and his pretty doggone talented son, untapped, untrained, raw talent soccer player. They went out and ran a 5K in Rockport, Mass. Rockport Father's Day 5K.
Cool.
Will, he's a rising freshman high school, never run a 5K in his life, and he finishes second overall in the race.
Wow.
Runs 19:24. Lickety split. It's like, 6:15 pace type thing.
Nicely done.
Fast. Nicely done. His dad was right next to him, kind of chugging along with him, saying, whoa, this is pretty amazing stuff. So hats off to them. The live and learn mistake department, and I always say it's live and learn department with Mark's mistakes kind of being at the forefront. Years ago, I was talking about this a few weeks on the podcast that ultimately didn't get posted, the one I was doing with Jay.
Right.
So it's kind of a story, I hope a learning experience for folks. But I was reminded of Bill Grant, longtime friend of mine, 30 years. We used to run together years ago when we both had a little more time on our hands. He just retired recently. He taught out at Western Alamo English. Great, fantastic English teacher. Motivating, creative, passionate, giving it all. Giving his all. He's retired. And he was always one of the best masters runners in town, 40 and over. 55 minutes in his 40s, he'd run for the 10-miler, Mike. 55 minutes, 5:30 pace.
Nice.
Fantastic runner. Well, when I was cutting my teeth on road racing back in my 20s, so in the early 80s, I was not only my time was improving, but in the local racing scene, I was racing once a week, once every 2 weeks. You start to notice someone up ahead of you. You say, gee, that guy's better than me. As I improve, I'd like to beat him. It's kind of a competitive attitude, but what the heck?
Yeah.
That's what our sport. It has a competitive side to it, thank goodness. So as I was moving my way along through my paces, I was also picking off who I thought were really, you know, good runners. And I'm saying, okay, wow, this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
My next guy was Bill Grant. I had raced for about 2.5, almost 3 years. I'm thinking, oh, he's my next guy. I'm going to come after him. I'd trained with him. I knew how good he was. It'd be a real, real, real accomplishment for me to say, I personally, to be able to say to myself, gee, I beat Bill. Great racer, good friend, but when you're on the starting line, there are no friends.
Yeah.
when you're racing, when you're competitive, you gotta give it your all. So there's a race out in Free Union. It's called the Spring Fever 10K. It doesn't exist anymore. Today was going to be my day. I knew if I ran with Bill and could beat him, I was going to run a PR and my best time ever for 10K. Off we went, locked horns with him at mile and a half. I didn't bother really to look at the split, but it was faster than what I should have been going. I don't know if Bill had, I had earned any respect from Bill, whether he was doing this on purpose or whether he was just running his normal race, but he started dropping the pace down. 2 miles, I'm right there with him still, and I'm thinking, today's the day. Still feeling pretty good, but still not paying attention to the splits very carefully, not realizing I was being kind of lured out, kind of rope-a-dopa.
Yeah.
3 miles, I'm still right next to him. We're halfway through this 10K. Literally, the split got read off. I had the last flash of a thought. Today, I'm going to beat Bill Grant. I got a side ache. I mean, it was like someone was in the woods with a gun and shot me in the gut. All of a sudden, I'm like, what the heck was that? Couldn't breathe. I had spent myself running stupidly, chasing Bill Grant. Off he went down the road. It was a long straightaway at that point. I could see him, and I'm trying. God, come on, I got to keep up with him. And I'm like a car running out of gas. I'm going slower and slower, and he's pulling away. So I learned two things that day. Chasing Bill Grant was folly. Okay. It really was.
Right.
I had reached the pinnacle of my running at that point, and going after him was biting off too much.
Right.
But then a guy named Dave Murphy, one of my closest all-time buddies, actually godfather to one of his kids, he's godfather to one of mine. He comes up alongside me and said, so, messed with Bill Grant today.
Yeah, right.
And he was in the race, and he's come up beside me going, looks like you did some damage. I said, God, Dave, he goes, okay, let me teach you how to get rid of a stitch, a side ache. And over the next quarter mile, he taught me how to breathe, how to hold my arms, how to rhythmatically slow down my breathing way down to my gut, long, deep breaths. All of a sudden, the stitch was gone. Off we went. We started picking up the pace. But by then, Bill was
long gone.
I think he finished about 30, 45 seconds ahead of me. Picked up 10, 15, 20 seconds a mile over the last 3 miles. A lot of lessons that day. And I was telling Bill that I'd like to write a short story that would sum up all my running experiences were all in that race.
That's great.
And I'd reached the zenith of my running career, and the title of the short story would be Chasing Bill Grant. Because everybody's got someone or something that they're chasing when they become a competitive runner. And let's go back to that five-hour marathoner. Someone say, oh, they're not competitive. Oh, yes, they are. They might be chasing the five-hour goal.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, in marathoning, you're less apt to be chasing someone rather than chasing yourself, your own time. And I tell this story quite often. Lisa Drain, she's trying to break 5 hours, biggest dream of her life when it comes to athletics. She finally does it. She says it was one of the single greatest personal physical accomplishments of her lifetime. She's almost 50 years old.
Awesome.
Yeah. So her title of her short story would be Chasing 5 Hours. But anyway, Bill has come out of, he's retired from teaching, but he's come out of racing retirement now that he's got time in his hands. And he was one of the lead guys for the Saturday morning crew, winning Masters team at the men's 4-miler. They won a $200 gift certificate, the whole gang of them, to go to Devil's Backbone, that neat place out there towards Wintergreen. So, Bill, good to see you back on the scene and a really special guy. I continue on people. I talk about this over and over again. Recover from races, recover from workouts, recover from weeks. We've been training a little higher level. And particularly, recover from marathons and long-distance races. It's becoming one of the biggest issues I'm seeing in our sport today is people not taking the proper amount of time to recover in between races. Mm. So hats off to three folks that are getting this right, Kenny Ball, Andrew Wright, and Heidi Johnson, three people in my life, three of my athletes that are fantastic at listening to their bodies, knowing how much time to take off. And I don't mean stop running. In fact, it's the opposite. You should never stop running after a marathon. You run a marathon on Sunday, you should get back out there on Monday or Tuesday and run a half a mile or a mile, get the body moving, make sure you don't tighten up. But over the next 6 or 8 weeks, you shouldn't be doing any heavy-duty training again.
Right.
Downhill running versus downhill racing. When you're in a normal training, recreational running mode, your stride length should be very short. You should be taking it easy on the downhills. In a race, we've talked about this before, open up the stride, lean into it, really pour it on, take advantage of the downhills. You do not want to do that on a regular basis, you end up hurting yourself, particularly your knees. I want to call out to Art Weltman again. Dr. Weltman, one of my favorite mentors. I use him quite often for advice in my own coaching. He's the head of the Exercise Phys Lab. He and his wife, Judy, a couple other PhD folks over there. They're just above MEM, Jim. They're doing VO2 testing now. They're doing body fat testing in their physiology core lab. Please, I would encourage you, it's a great service, to give them a tap. Judy Weltman is running the show for ART with this 982-3565, 982-3565. Give them a call. Get to know what your potential is. What is your potential as a runner, Mike Pisaglia? What is it? We don't know. Go get a VO2 max done. It's pretty cool stuff right here in town by an expert. I continue to encourage folks, if you can, to go to dailyprogress.com. A little self-promotion here, but go to the blog, dailyprogress.com. Go to sports and click on the Daily Run. This is a weekly podcast. I'm trying to get three or four of these Daily Run blog posts, whatever it's called, in there. Local running, some tips. I had the story about Megan in there yesterday. Just as a kind of a learning experience, but also as something somewhat entertaining.
Yeah,
it really is. Sorry, Megan, but you've provided us with... I told her when I
it's
saw
out of
her...
a movie or something.
I saw her yesterday. I said, you vaulted yourself, even though you failed at your goal, you vaulted yourself to legendary status. Everyone's like in awe of this thing. And she goes, well, it was a stupid mistake on my part. I said, nevertheless, you accomplished something pretty amazing.
And a lot of the times you learn more from experiences like that. And if
you do.
She can use that for her next race.
She will.
I mean, she'll be in phenomenal shape.
Now, but one thing, I was talking to her yesterday. You got to believe right now she's hungry.
Sure.
She wants to go run another race. She wants to make up for this debacle. Not debacle as in time, but the whole mess.
Right.
She wants to make up for it fast. Can't do it marathon. I said, the bad news I got for you, Megan, is you need 8 to 10 weeks to recover from this because you ran a 30-mile race, really.
Yep.
You started with 6:30 pace for the first 3 miles, just 2:50 pace in a marathon, not 3 hours. And so talk about recovery. And she's nodding her head saying, I know, I get you. What does she risk? Burnout and injury. Long-term injuries. You know, little niggly things that bother you for 2 or 3 years. So, Matt Guttridge is the answer to last week's trivia question. He was the original, the first debut inaugural men's 4 miler champ. Matt ran at the university. He's actually one of my employees. Wonderful guy. Married one of my employees. They met while working.
That's cool.
Melissa. They now live in Williamsburg. Matt teaches down there and coaches at a high school. God, I'm drawing a blank. The name Grafton. Grafton's the name of high school. One of his star runners, Kyle King. Kind of a cool name, Kyle King. He's coming to run at the university this fall. I'm going to go longer than normal on the upcoming list because I'm going to be away for a couple of weeks. So starting with July 4th, there's the Independence Day 5K. Wonderful holiday run. I highly recommend it. It's up at Forest Lake, 7:30 in the morning. The Kiwanis and the Charleston Track Club put it on. Jay Wilderman does a tremendous job of that every year. It's actually a surprisingly fast or fair course. Even though Forest Lake tends to be hilly, a lot of nice downhills where you would open up the stride and lean into it to make up for time. July 7th, Charleston Track Club meet. Oh, by the way, July 4th, you can enter that race the day of the race. July 7th is Charleston Track Club meet number 3. It's the last one of the season. All comers meet. Please come on out. We had a huge crowd last week. A lot of fun, a lot of kids, a lot of masters runners. Great stuff. Charleston High School Track, 6:30 on July 7th. July 9th, Summer Extravaganza, 5K and 10K. That's over in Waynesboro. It sounds like fun. July 17th, the Thundering 5K and 10K. Thundering 5K, 10K. Another one sounds kind of cool. Devil's Backbone. Mm. So you get to partake in whatever activities they have over there set up for you. Sounds like a good event. July 23rd, Fairview 5K. It's a American Cancer Society run, Fairview Club. Great race. Well-organized. Very fortunate to have that event on our racing scene. That's July 23rd. July 27th and 28th, you got any kids out there? 3 to 12, no, 5 to 12. 5 to 12, we don't take 3-0s. 5 to 12, two mornings, 27th and 28th. First morning, Charleston High School Track. Second morning at Panorama. What a treat. Water games, running techniques, fun stuff. The Ragamount Racing Team actually hosts it, and they're great counselors. They had a blast last year, although they all went home exhausted. They said it was the most tired they've been. And these guys that train 100 miles a week, so that was exhausting. You know, 50, 60, 70 kids out there. Women's 4 miler training program continues. They meet every Saturday, like I said, 7:30 at the park. So a lot of little things going on, right. Some bigger things, but that's your July, basically. There's one more sprint triathlon in July, and I'm drawing a blank on the date. I think it's second to last Sunday in July, maybe. But anyway, you go to Seville Tri Club. Their website, and you'll know about that down at Walnut Creek. Our runners of the week, got to give a nod to our steeplechasers. That is a grueling event, by the way. Mm. Hurdles, water pits, surging, slowing up. I mean, going over those hurdles and surging. And it's, you know, 3,000 meters. It's a hike, you know, a little less than 2 miles. So congrats to Stephanie and Donnie on their accomplishments, fourth in the nation. I can say that, in the nation, sixth in the nation.
It's cool.
And they're right here, local folks. Our hats off to them. And then got to do a call out to Megan Bowen on her 30-mile, quote-unquote, marathon experience with the extra-charged, quote-unquote, warm-up of 3.5 miles at 20 seconds faster than your targeted race pace. In the history of marathoning, in my world anyway, which isn't a big history, but 30 years of coaching, 30 years of listening to stories,
right,
30 years of advising people, I have never known someone to warm up at that pace for 3 miles before a marathon and be able to pull it off. It's a pretty amazing stuff. All right, everyone. I think that's about it. Thanks so much for listening. We'll have some tales, hopefully, to tell you about hiking and running and the villages of England.
Very cool.
Along Kent and Dorset and Cornwall and the Cotswolds. And then do a quick visit to my parents. I have an old farmhouse in France, too. We're going to go do the Channel and that. So we'll be able to talk to you about that when I get back. All right. Thanks again for listening. Have a good week and stay on your feet.
This week's edition of Runcast was brought to you by the Ragged Mountain Running Shop, Central Virginia's community running and walking family partner since 1982. Conveniently located on the historic UVA corner with free parking at their doorstop. Visit them online at raggedmountainrunning.com or make sure you friend them on Facebook, Ragged Mountain Running Shop.